So before we start into questions, I'm going to go back to the share screen and continue on a little bit. So understanding that all of this, that your best and most, and if you recall, we talked to you last time about the highest healed state. And the highest healed state involves these three points: your visibility, your vitality, and your harmony. And so when we talk about the network, we're saying, you know, how vital is your network? Meaning, how involved are you in it? Are you putting yourself and the kind of energy that you want to out in the world in a way that really serves you as to feed back that sense of aliveness? The next part is harmony. And within your network nodes, within your, or where are sources that could be improved, could be attuned, that you could attune better in a way that made yourself a more resonant case? Notice resonance here. We're talking again about vibration. And lastly, visibility. To truly manifest your power of being and your power of joy, you must be seen. And we don't mean you have to be famous. We don't mean you have to be a celebrity. We don't mean you have to go out and publish books or be on websites or go out in the street and sing spirituals or any of that kind of thing. It just means you don't hide, that you allow yourself to be an example to others. And understanding, you see the three scales that we have there. So we're talking about the more that you experience high vibration, the more you would experience natural joy. Natural joy does not mean kind of exuberant happiness. It means a satisfied state of being able to see the beauty and the resonance in all things. Joylessness is that feeling of disconnection, usually isolation, that happens when one is uninvolved or one is unafraid to be involved in life. And then, of course, your effectiveness in the world, which is what you are here to do as a human in a Homo sapien body, is to find a way to be as productive with yourself as possible. So it doesn't mean you go around having to go do somebody else's work that's designed, but literally, how do you put the best parts of you, the most parts of you, out in service to your other networks? Because the more that you do that, the more that you will find that networks then start feeding each other, and that is the definition of mutuality. And that is the emergence of the mature soul paradigm that we've talked about. Now, ultimately, folks, we bring you Groucho. Groucho, this crazy, crazy sage or artisan who would love to just be as ridiculous as possible, but he also was incredibly wise. And Groucho, in his statement here, really says it. He acknowledges, you know, reality isn't always fun. It's not always pleasant. But as you see, your life is the only place you're really going to get fed. Your life, it's the only place to get a decent meal of energy, of love, association, and of potential achievement. A potential of manifesting yourself is in reality, is doing it here. Not spiritual reclusion, not hiding behind ideologies, not going away somewhere else. It's being here. So one of the ways then that we want to bring this notion, and we're going to introduce the concept of you all have different ways of looking at yourself, but we want to say that diversity is the best way to always get the best amount of information. And the best amount of information is here are four different ways: the unified self, the brain self, and you all know the brain self, it's all the work in science and neurology. That in fact, yes, ladies and gentlemen, your bodies are governed by what your genetics built into the mechanical you. The brain is the receiver of consciousness. It is not the seat of consciousness itself, but when your brain has dysfunction or lack of nourishment or is not treated, the physiology is not treated well, then your mind, that part that is a co-creation between essence and personality, cannot function at its optimal. Looking at things in a very pragmatic way, the modular self concept. And the modular self says is, you know, who are you in different functions in your life? So, you know, are you a good employee? Are you a good parent? Are you a good friend? Are you a, you know, and even aside from good and bad, what parts are you? So those are some of the roles you play out there. And then this idea of many selves, you've heard us talk about the concepts of sub-personalities. And they're all in this notion of self. This is the soliverse, the solipsistic sense of who you are. And so when you talk about solipsism, when you talk about your many selves, one of the things that we'd offer you is to say, not only you as a functionary, which is the modular self, but what about you and your sub-personalities? Who is your inner warrior? Who is your inner, you know, your inner lover? Who is your inner creator? Who is your inner child? Who is your inner teacher? Who is, in other words, all these aspects of reality, what are they in there? And of course, the humor we brought to it, and we really encourage in this Sage Warrior Year, is get down to brass tacks, but you might as well have a chuckle about it. So you see here on the statement, if you see me talking to myself, just move along. We're having a team meeting. The first mutuality that needs to be healed within most of you is the team of your subpersonalities who exist within you, many of whom find themselves in competition with each other or in suppressed one by the other. Your inner parent suppressing your inner child, your inner idealist suppressing your inner pragmatist, or for, you know, for that matter, your inner cynic, you know, shitting all over everything. All of these parts are in you. Go have a meeting with them. And by using these different forms of self that we just did, you can find different windows to look and evaluate. And if you do that, you expand your awareness, you expand your world, you expand your effectiveness as a person. So we're going to close before we take questions with this last statement, because this is pertinent, particularly to the remainder of the Warrior Year. Many of you who have read philosophy, we're talking about traditional historic Greek philosophy, know this statement from Aristotle. It was published in his Nicomachean Ethics. And it's a very powerful one that we want to talk about because it has to do with the warrior ultimately brings to bear potentially in a situation when they defend a principle. And Aristotle is discussing the difference between anger for a principle deployed and utilized as opposed to anger deployed as a weapon to beat someone, to destroy them. And he says, anybody can become angry. Indeed, anger is a primary function of the aggression nature of the Homo sapien and all mammalian life form. But anybody can become angry or aggressive. That's easy because it's reactive. But to be angry with the right person and to the right degree or amount at the right time of intervention and for the right purpose and in what way? Hot anger, cold anger, deliberate, loud, or a whispering threat. That is what you have to learn. And that is not within everybody's power. And it is not easy. And we want to acknowledge that it is not easy and that it will take many trials and errors and it will take embracing the courage inside of you to take that liminal risk at times and know sometimes you're going to do a face plant, face down in the dirt in the mud. But the key is not to stay down. It's to get up. It's to brush yourself off. And it's to keep going. So we'll turn it back to you. And we'll give you a chance to ask your questions about current events and or whatever other things of interest that you have on your mind or on your plate that you'd like to discuss. So again, with the hands, okay, let's see, we'll start with Nan, and then we see Russ, and then people can follow from there. Nan, please, feel free to, and then Jean. You just need to unmute yourself, Nan.
Okay. This is just an observation. When you first came on at the beginning, before you started channeling, your voice showed that you'd been having respiratory troubles. That disappeared. Were you aware of that?
One of the ways that we support our channels often is we infuse them with, you know, elemental energies to upraise their vitality and their vibration. And since we told Steve that we really wanted this night, that, we acknowledge his illness and his fatigues. And we said, don't worry, we'll take care of you. And he trusts us enough to know that we will follow suit with that. So by taking him down into the lower ranges of his vocal cords, out of the raspy areas of his larynx, you notice that we literally did a mechanical kind of shift by our intentionality and utilizing his body differently. So he is now aware of it by virtue of your input. And thank you, Nan, for that, because many times when I'm doing this work, I don't get to notice things exactly while it's happening. So again, appreciate the input. Anything else you'd like to follow up with that, or is that the main observation?
That was it.
Thank you. Okay. Russ Leiser and then Jean Sauvage.
Wow, that was a very good observation. And thank you, Michael. That gives me some hope that we can get out of this bloggy body of ours. I've got two for Michael. One, to follow up on my observation, the last 2 to 3 weeks has been very energetically stimulating. In some of the previous discussions, Michael, you said to watch your money and be careful of the near and far future because of our economics generally, that's happening not only in the nation, but in the world. But I'm not getting that feeling. It seems like it's just the opposite. I'm getting this energy and the stimulus to go out and promote business that's ultimately, I'm hoping, to start a new business. I don't feel conflicted, but I wanted to make sure I wasn't going off with the part of my ego that I was going to run into a brick wall. And the second one is I've been introduced to a new channel called Ismael Perez. Mm. And he has some incredibly unique and somewhat conflicting futuristic views, not only to do with our higher level and the influx of extraterrestrials, but of Donald Trump.
Okay. So those are pretty broad canvases to paint on. So we'll try a couple of things. Our standing about, or our general admonition in the beginning of this year about watching your money and not going into debt was based on the concept that many of you really need to strip away a lot of your profligate spending and pay attention to the way that your resource energies, which is in many people's lives, are predominantly their finances, but also their material assets, that you have to pay attention to those and get grounded on what those things do for you. And and face the underlying kind of mature young soul precept that has, you know, driven so much of the way that market systems, so-called market systems, have built things, but more like consumer systems have been encouraged to build. And that is spend.
Exactly.
Spending in and of itself is not a bad thing. It's just a trading of resources. But the problem has been that the mindset of the young soul era has been, you can buy virtually anything. And no, you can't. That the delusion that a product or a service or a person can get you something that you yourself should be supplying actually creates that bigger hole of lack and want that drives greed. And that, and greed is always an unequal proposition. So that's what we were talking about when we said guard your money. Now, in talking about the economic system, you know, we warned everybody about gas, and that's happening. And we warned everybody about food, and that's happening. And we warned that inflation was going to keep going. What we also said, though, is that, and we mentioned it again tonight, the newness concept. There are lots of people trying to develop and create new, and remember, they're going to be small at first, business paradigms and business services that are more in alignment with sustainability economies, green energy economies, person-to-person, one-on-one service interaction-based economies, rather than large institution and automation economies. So our warnings still stand. But if you're, you know, the point is, you are feeling that creative surge. You are feeling that opening to possibilities after you've already had a number of contractions over the course of the last couple of years. So for you, you've done a lot of the shoveling out of the goal of discrimination that started this year, and now are coming into a place of acceptance, both in terms of, you know, wow, I see new opportunities. I even see new women in my life, you know, and the idea that suddenly doors are opening rather than closing and collapsing. And it had to happen in a moving center year, because notice in the last 2 years how much your body has had to be reconstructed and healed.
You know? Exactly.
And for you, exactly. And for, you know, for a king, kings and scholars and warriors often have to get their body just whomped or remanufactured some way, or, you know, a massive intervention done to it before they release etheric energy that can then start moving things in their universe. And that, and you're a good example of that. So continue to go with it, Russ. It's not contrary. Then as far as the other channel, we know the other channel. And we know that the other channel also channels a mid-astral level being who embraces the paradigm that destruction will always bring about renewal, and that Donald Truck, might as well call him Truck, is a great healer instead of a great train wreck.
Exactly. And
there are many discarnate beings who hold that perception. We do not, because in fact, when you have a limited system of space to do your things in, all destruction does not bring around rebirth. It can bring about total destruction. And when you deal with a biosphere that's on the brink, and you deal with unbalanced human systems that have so dramatically created extremes in insecurity versus hyper-control, and you have both of those kind of systems teetering at the same time toward collapse, it is not revelation and renewal and rehealing. When we said earlier in tonight's talk that it will be four generations before there is any human beings leaving this planet to go colonize anywhere else in any kind of numbers, that's 200 years before that is even ready to happen. let alone significant enough numbers to preserve humanity if it can preserve itself. So, because you remember, the young soul, baby soul, infant soul paradigm has had approximately, you know, 20 to 50,000 years of time-tested reality and is embedded in the instinctive centers of every living thing, including the great ape known as Homo sapiens sapiens. And we say it just like that. For those of you, even as old souls, got to realize you're just the most verbal ape. What is also true is that you have an ascendant essence that has descended into an animal body and co-houses within it. But it's always in struggle for control. And yes, thank you, May. You could say it exactly that way. The notion of destruction needing to happen is a very young soul concept, which has justified every essential conquest of every other culture that it's ever gone out and destroyed, the overtaking of so-called the weak, tearing down, you know, useful institutions, buildings, or whatever in the name of improvement and progress. It's like, yes, there was always recycling. Recycling is different through evolution than it is through overt conquest and destruction. And that is that's the paradigm that, Mr. Trump not only adheres to, but he is, rapidly, because it also evolution wants a creation to progress in general, but evolution does not require progression. It just progression happens. Advancement is not guaranteed. And all that Mr. Trump and that energy and that group is looking for is further concentration of power. It's advancement for themselves, but it perturbs the entire system into such disarray and to such disequilibrium, destruction is inevitable. Of the entire system, even their own security. I mean, if you have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, you know, literally just marching. Imagine your worst zombie movie and you had a million people marching side by side. They would literally march over armies. They would march over and crush buildings. They would march over all the rich people inside of them. Because when systems collapse, everything happens and collapses in it. And that is where evolution, you know, can either start building with some of the tenants that are there, or completely destroy things through an extinction event, which in the case of Homo sapiens sapiens can include them. So anyway, it's fine and dandy, you know, follow out the logic and the reasoning of this gentleman's, concepts and precepts and see where they fall off the cliff. And all you have to do is just kind of see, is there any way that humanity knows how to manufacture, say, oxygen? And the answer, the answer is an unequivocal no. All you can do is maybe through massive, massive retooling of the entire planet's industry, remove carbon dioxide and other inert and combustible gases out of the atmosphere as to allow oxygen to be a higher proportion. But that's all you can do. And the direction of that is not happening at all, or at least so minutely that it's not having any effect. And unfortunately, the reality is human industry is still geared toward not only using its current methods, which poison things, but accelerating its current methods. We'll offer you a literary reference for all of you, because it is done by one of the best writers of today. His name is Kim Stanley Robinson, and he wrote a very nonfiction science fiction book called Ministry for the Future. Read it, and you will find all the scientific, as well as all the human, sociological arguments spelled out in a beautifully interesting story. of the near future, complete with references. In any case, okay, so we had, who was next? Let's see, after Russ.
Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome, Russ. I think it was Jean. Was it you, Jean? And then Lori, and then Mary Lynn. And by the way, welcome, Mary Lynn, your first time here. But go ahead, Jean.
So I have two questions. One is personal and one is more broadly community. But the first one I felt called to ask when I came on today, and it may sound goofy, but have I had COVID-19? And if so, when?
It looks like you had it last year, around in 2021, that is, around May, March to May, somewhere in there. You had the virus. You manifested only a minimal number of symptoms. It was most, interestingly enough, they were almost all psychological ones that were based on the upset of your body chemistry. So the sniffles that you had and the headaches you had and the neck aches you had were related to COVID. So unusual manifestation of symptoms, but yeah, you had it.
Thank you. And my second one is related to the financial markets. I'm concerned about the Australian banks having issues. And what does that mean, maybe worldwide and maybe according to, and for the United States, the collapse, I guess, of the banks on certain levels?
Well, complete collapse of the banking system is not going to happen quite yet, but the contractions of them are going to continue to happen. And what will really happen and will really hurt people is that because they will have wasted all their all the little stockholders and all the little shareholders and all the little people's money and reclaim a place, you know, for themselves, whether it's bailouts and so forth. But that kind of system will happen. But the banking structures are controlled by, you know, the people who control the system. So they're not going to allow a complete, you know, collapse in them. But you will all feel hits in your pensions and the values of your portfolios and all that kind of thing. As far as the stability of things are concerned, the real instability of things is just how much people are invested, as we said, in credit, in debt, and in financial resources. You know, we have made what we acknowledge as the bold claim that it's all make-believe. It's all make-believe. When your economic systems decided to leave a gold or a precious metal standards over the last 100 years, any sense of trying to balance reality against what those numbers and stocks and bonds and all that kind of stuff, meaning anything, disappeared. They are all leveraged against themselves. And what does that mean? It's all imaginary. Meaning right now, the oil companies are inflating prices, nothing to do with supply. Nothing to do with supply. All because they are in a market where they know they've got everyone on the hook. In economic terms, they call oil and gas or the energy sector a very inelastic market, because people, great changes in price will not react in changes in how much decrease in demand there is. Demand is virtually unchanged in natural gas, oil, and coal, unchanged by people because they have to have it for heating in parts of the world that are very cold, whether it's gas, oil, or natural gas or coal. And because in the United States, particularly, even with the rise of electric vehicles, you are still also facing the rise of the big hogs, you know, the muscle cars. That's all part of this 100% masculine energy, the hyper-masculine that we've talked about. It's insane. But that's the mentality that still drives, so to speak, the demand of needing to put big dollars worth of gas into big engine tanks. Anyway, that's just some of that. Hope you don't mind, Jean. We're going to jump on to another one. I believe we said Lori and then Mary Lynn. and then we'll call it a night after Maryland. So go ahead, Lori or Brad, whichever one of you is going to ask.
Hello.
We just needed to give you a little prompt, like threaten to jump your turn. Oh, no. People in the West are very, very conditioned to lines. Have you noticed that? You've all learned to socialize, and it's a good cooperative measure. It is. But you want to get somebody upset, scared, or activate their alertness, is threatened to say, next. So your question.
Yes, I had a couple of questions. One was regarding my practice has recently, I wouldn't say that it's tanked or anything, but it's really dropped a moderate amount. I would say it worries me a little bit. We just acquired some other expenditures from a vehicle we just got that was pretty significant. So that combination of things kind of worries me a bit. So I guess, you know, one question that's, you know, more specific about me is, do you see anything in particular I need to do? I was going to tweak my...
Brad, if we can interrupt you, because more of a personal question and not necessarily applicable to the large, we would advise you perhaps to take that offline and maybe, you know, get those questions answered that way. Did you have a question that's kind of more global in scope of your other one?
Yeah, the other one was more about, you know, any thoughts about the nuclear war threat with Russia and with Korea and all of that mess. Just wondered if there's any thoughts about that, the risk factors.
Okay, risk is high, but it's not extremely high. These the wealthy plutarchs in the world like being wealthy plutarchs in the world. And so they've got to keep a world. And it's more fun to play brinksmanship than it is to actually, you know, destroy large parts of the world. And then, by the way, have his own people, whether it's Kim Jong-un or Vladimir Putin or Xi coming after Putin, whatever. They're not gonna do anything like that. The survivors would make it a mass, you know, mess. And they're smart enough to know that. But the brinksmanship and the verbiage is there. To keep much of the population, you know, on pins and needles, and unfortunately, two halves of the population react differently. You know, one half of the population, you know, thinks that more guns and more bombs and more whatever is the answer because they're more scared. The others are equally scared, but think that that either silence or, you know, or protest is the way. Silence and protest is much more of a humane way of doing it, but it's, you know, it's still kind of like fear against fear, and there's a lot of it in the world right now. But interestingly enough, it is not as high as it was, say, this time 2 years ago at the election point for Donald Trump. People have instinctively kind of chilled down, the ratcheted down some of the background fear about other humans on a practical note, because consumption is really high. And as long as your instinctive center is getting plenty of goodies on lots of levels, it can rationalize a lot of things away. So we don't see nuclear war actually being something that's, and even on a limited scale, we would say that if there was an accidental use of a quote, WMD, it's not going to be of the megaton variety that you saw in some of the nuclear Armageddon movies. They would be the smaller version that would have, you know, that would take out a 10 block area in a small city, you know, like on a SAM missile or something, but it would leave radiation and therefore detectable as a nuke. That's our points there.
That include like meltdowns of nuclear power plants that they might so-called accidentally hit?
Oh, you mean like what the Russians did in Ukraine?
Yeah, like Sisyphoria or whatever.
Yeah, right. The meltdowns are much less likely to cause explosions. even though they can cause, you know, like disaster zones like Chernobyl. So that is not so much the, I mean, those have potential, but a lot of nuclear power plants in the world are much better designed than they were back then. So their fail safes and containments are actually a lot better. Not perfect, but better. Unless they were to bomb a nuclear plant and then blow up all that spent fuel around. Now that's a little something different. And then it would put it airborne, you know, rather than say, you know, the big nuclear winter kind of thing, or the flash of, you know, of 3,000 degrees instantaneously incinerating everybody. Thank you for your questions. Marilyn, we'll end with you. You're welcome. If you depress your space bar, Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. Really, two questions. One is more of a technical nature. Will the audio as well as the visuals that you've provided for tonight, will they be available for us?
The audio will. I usually don't save the visual. Now, I will make the PowerPoint available so people go through it, and because it's easier to download that way, it's much more difficult to try and just make the video, or at least for a non-tech like me. If in some days the fame and fortune of this channel get to the point where he has throngs of people willing to produce and do all his technical stuff, perhaps then, but not now. Otherwise, it's just going to be the audio portion, and that'll be up in a couple of weeks on the website.
And second of all, right now, what percentage, or I should say, do we have currently in the United States, do we have an even keel amount of younger souls to older souls, or is there a slight increase in older souls in relation to younger souls, or what are the ratios, younger to older souls?
In terms of absolute soul age, I mean, the actual ages of people themselves, the ratio right now is about 52 to 48, where 52% is mature and old. But the manifesting age of many of those people is still around six young as an aggregate. So, you know, the United States will have to face its own economic and, but not just economic, it's really, unfortunately, going to have to face its own internal farm collapse before people wise up and say, it may be better, instead of taking a hog to the abattoir, maybe taking a billionaire there instead. Because the reality is this is all artificially constrained. So it's when these false realizations, these false ideals that have been embedded in the young soul era really show their clay feet and collapse. And capitalism in the human scale is the largest single system where that fraud exists. We're not talking about free enterprise. We've made those distinctions, by the way. You haven't been here with us, but we'll let you know. Free enterprise literally means that the ability of persons to reasonably and responsibly interact with each other as economic engines, including production. But in capitalism, you need not only financial capitalism, you actually use governments to usually constrain the power of others to enter into markets, as well as make sure that barriers to entries are maintained so that there's concentrations of power and that inequality is perpetuated. That is what most people don't get. Most people are onto this nice, simple ideal that, everybody can make anything of themselves in America. And we said, you know, the phrase of you've been drinking the Kool-Aid, on occasion, a person is and finds the way to do that. That may be both their karmic setup as well as the triggering of a few things, but also that person quite often has really, really mutilated themselves to get there, to get to that level of power and wealth. Because power and wealth is another basic assumption of the young soul era, that it's somehow rewarded by virtue. Power and wealth aren't usually rewarded by virtue. They are taken from non-virtue. So in any case, it's only at those times when you have paradigm-breaking events where somebody can do a rags-to-riches story, you know, like an Alexander Graham Bell, you know, with his advent of the telephone. Then he could build it from scratch and create an entire industry. Thomas Edison with electricity, create it from scratch and then build an entire industry, that kind of thing. But today in the world, we don't see anything on the horizon that has that potential power, because you also have a global economic marketplace and there are no new places to just start where there's no competition. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Certainly. Well, everyone, thank you very, very much for being here this evening. We hope that's been of use to you and helped prepare you for the rest of 2022, its themes, its toughness, its qualities, and to realize that you all have the power within you. You all have the strength and there are overleaves available. And the one last thing that we will reiterate from one of the earlier slides, one of the most important things that you can start reoriented into the mature soul, especially the remainder of your lives into the mature soul area, is base your power in the power of your purpose, not the power of hope. Hope is an emotion that can wax and wane and fleet and even crush you when you are in hopelessness. But sticking to purpose, you can work even in the most dire situations because you know purpose demands your action. And that is the shift from using sheer emotion as the driver to starting to lead with intellect. Not overrunning emotion, but just not allowing yourself to fall backward into that native animal quality of emotion running things. What makes you sapient individuals is knowing that your mind can operate even in the presence of despair. It's just will and concentration that will allow you to do that. Getting infusions of hope, go ahead. Keep making those and acquiring those vibrationally whenever you can. It's not a bad food. It's just one that comes irregularly. So don't depend on it as your major nourishment. Anyway, thank you all very much, and we hope that's been of use to you. And we'll see you at the beginning of the year when we talk about the overleaves for 2023.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michael and Stephen.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Hope you feel better.